Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Alan.
Hey, man. How are you?
How are you, dude?
I found the link and I just left it, man. I was just fucking texting. How are you getting on, mate? I'm trying to sort this out, mate.
No worries.
Hey, how are you?
Hey.
All
right. Yeah, man. Great to see you. This is the brave new world, isn't it?
Okay.
Are you doing a lot of this stuff at the moment in the lead up to the film, or what's going on?
I usually do, but it's not actually that much. I mean, compared to the fucking 90s, man, you know, not that much. You know what I mean?
Is that your phone?
it won't be that much. You know what I mean? It's just somebody sent a text. You know what I mean?
So, I'd like to start off, mate, by talking about just your, and I mean this obviously as a huge compliment, your almost physical transformation. It seems like in the last 12 months with, you know, the world shutting down, a lot of people, I think, have been, you know, sitting at home stewing and sulking. You seem to have gone the other way, and it's been an inspiration for me to see. You've been out there every day, exercising, walking, getting fresh air, and you look amazing, mate.
Yeah, I'm nearly 40 pounds. I'll be 40 pounds this week. I'm about 38 pounds in now. Do you know what I mean?
What's the secret?
Well, mainly keto diet.
Right.
And it's a, I mean, all I'm really eating, I mean, it's really strict at the moment because I'm really shoving down on it. And I'm in Wales at the moment. But
Right.
But, yeah, I mean, it was mainly walking and getting it there. I mean, I don't walk that much in Wales. I did 6 miles today. But mainly it's like blackberries, raspberries, eggs, fish, meat, keto bars, and just really strict, no carbs. You know what I mean? Nuts, a lot of nuts.
I've been on quite a big health kick myself since New Year's Eve, not for as long as you, but isn't it incredible how much what you put in your body,
yeah,
and obviously we're stating the obvious here, but it just how much of an effect it has on your mental health for the better?
Yeah. I mean, I'll put the light on, I'll show you. Yeah, there you go. So, I mean,
there he is, a lean, mean killing machine.
Like down for 230 to 182 pounds.
Wow!
And I'm going for 180, and that'll be £50. So, I mean, I think I'll probably do it. Do you know what I mean?
And how are you feeling in yourself? I know, obviously, you'd rather be out there
light, man,
at gigs.
I'm feeling light, you know what I mean? Which is good.
Mood's elevated. Life's good.
Yeah. I put it off. I'm down a bit. If you're okay with that.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
It looks like we're filming a horror film. It could be. Did you see there was a horror film made about a Zoom concept? Did you see that one?
Tell you a good story at this house because. I bought this house in 97 and I'd started going out with Kate around then, and she said to me, she'd got a cottage. She used to come away for weekends and stuff like that. And where was it? Crickhowell. It's in Wales, right? Posh village, right? And she had a wee 40, 50 grand cottage that she used to go to. She'd bought in her band, you know, she was in this band, Fraser Chorus, right? So she said to me, oh, let's go to Hay and Wye. It's a bohemian little town. So we go to this town and we're going past an estate agent. And you know what I'm like? I mean, I'm just like, oh, I'll look at anything, you know, because I'm curious about fucking everything, right? So I looked and it was a fucking mansion with 15 acres on sale for 350 grand. This is 97. So that was probably the equivalent of like $750,000 then. Do you know what I mean? But anyway, it's three.
Yeah.
So I was like, come on, we'll go look at it. And she went, oh, you know, what are you talking about? Because I think I just bought a big house in London, I think. That was getting done up. So I think she just thought it was crackers, do you know what I mean, you know? She goes out, oh, like, you know, let's just go and have a look. So I said, I honestly wasn't trying to buy or anything like that. So we went to have a look and it was absolutely smashed up, right? And nothing had been done to it in 25 years, but it was dilapidated to fuck, right?
Right.
And there was two people about, must have been my age now, right? But I was young then. I was only about 36 or something like that. And these people were about 60 and were posh. And the guy, obviously a bit nervous that I'd showed up, said, what do you do? I went, I do music. And he laughed at me and I'm like, fucking do you, man, right? So I went, I looked around there and I went, right. And then went and phoned the estate agent. And then he went, blah, blah. You know, because he told us where to go. And I phoned him and I went, that house he built, it's actually not for sale. It's been done. You know, it's waiting to everything to get transferred. I went, how much? And he goes, 350. And I went, what about 370? He went, sold to you. So I fucked the guy. I bought the house. You know what I mean? And then the truth is I fell in love with the house. Do you know what I mean? I just always thought it was good. I used to send bands down here to write. Bobby Gillespie, when he basically had a fucking nervous breakdown, he came here for about 3 months. The Libertines wrote their second album here. You know, I never lived in it. I just used to send bands to this big house that I owned and go and write. And then eventually, about 2008-09, I wanted to bring my daughter up and I didn't want her to be like one of these London kids because she was going to school with all the, you know, the celebrity kids basically. And I didn't want to be like that. And she didn't want to be like that. She's cool. So we came to Wales.
You seem to me, Alan, to be someone, when somebody pushes you in a corner and says you can't do this, that's exactly when you're going to go, I'm doing it. Whatever that might be. Is that an accurate assessment?
Sometimes, do you know what I mean? Sometimes. It depends how posh they are. If they're really posh, I'm fucking probably going to do them, do you know what I mean? Fucking spunk. I don't really bother. I don't see it. Thing, but I think if it's somebody looking down their nose at me, I'm probably going to stick it right up their arse. You know what I mean?
What takes you out to Wales now? Just a little bit of a retreat from the city madness.
No, I mean, I just came down. I don't advocate anymore, but I just came down to fucking make sure that, you know what I mean, everything's cool. You know what I mean? Which it is, and I'm losing loads of weight here, so you know I'll probably stay here in a couple of weeks. You know. What I mean?
How is it in London, man? I got out of there in August and moved back to Birmingham. And it just seemed to me to be becoming slowly more and more post-apocalyptic with every passing month, the more shops and everything was shutting down. And what's it like now?
There's nobody about, you know what I mean?
Ghost town.
Yeah, and I mean, the information coming out is crazy. Like I call it the Tory propaganda. Every day in the Daily Mail, we'll be back by June. Everybody will be vaccinated. And then you read what the scientists are actually saying. Are you going to LA Times yesterday? Like the South African variant, Matt, the vaccine only works to 57% against that. So it ain't over, mate. Do you know what I mean?
No. Yeah, we've got to hunker down for the long haul, haven't we, and just adapt and
I think
get with the programme.
Hopkins actually criminal? Really, I'm being really serious now. Just this whole hypey press shit that it's all over and people believe it. And because I'm always quelling my own musicians going, it's a long one, you know. Because, you know, you've got everybody that I manage thinking that they're fucking doing festivals, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I can't imagine there'll be any.
No, there won't be. There won't be.
It'll be good, but unlikely.
Listen, we all want it. We're always in money, you know.
You obviously, you know, have been holding back on the release of the film for a while. I imagine, was it originally because you wanted to wait till COVID was over and then you just realised there was no point?
It's to finish, Matt. Do you know what I mean? It's ended up brilliant, but the lockdown's actually done us a favour, because if the lockdown hadn't happened, everybody got off Nick Moran's case, because everybody, the investors were all wanting to put it out and get it out fast and everything like that, get their money back. And because of the lockdown, everybody had to take their foot off the accelerator and go, let's just get it right. And it became a better film for that, because Nick's been editing it for a year now, do you know what I mean? So it's really good. Well, you've seen it now. You've seen it.
I've watched it 3 times, mate, and I have so many questions.
All right, on you go.
I absolutely loved it, and loved it more with each viewing.
Around by a long, long way, man. You know, you were the first real podcast guy when we done that interview 2 or 3 years ago that I went, oh, that's what it really should be like. Do you know what I mean? You were brilliant. Do you know what I mean?
Well, thank you very much. It's nice to have you back on.
Yeah, I know.
It has been nearly 4 years, mate.
Oh, is it 4 years? Right. Okay.
Yeah. And
just ask away, man. Just ask what you want.
Well, the first thing I want to chat to you about is the team. Obviously, you mentioned Nick Moran there. People will probably know him most famously for playing the character in Lockstock, yeah, Sting's son. But he's obviously a filmmaker and director as well. He did the brilliant Telstar film about Joe Meek. What was your first initial meeting with Nick like? And were you happy when you heard he was going to be the guy to be making it?
Because it's you, I'll just be really honest, right?
Please do.
When I heard it was him, I was going along with it because everybody was going. More than anything, I'm very tight with Irvin Welsh, right? And Irvin went, he's good, just trust me on it, right? Because I didn't like him before I met him. Do you know what I mean? You know when you just get a vibe on somebody? I just thought he was one of these London chancers. I was like, and then I met him. I had a meeting with him and I thought, and he was really, really gushy about me. And I was like, but the more I got to know him, he's just really talented. You know what I mean? He's a brilliant, he'll do really well as a director. But initially, when I heard it was him, I was like, okay. Irvin was the one that shoved it through. Irvin went, we've got to get him, he's brilliant. And he said, the exact same as you, Joe Meek, let's get him. It'll be brilliant, McGee, trust me. Because Irvin knows about films. And I was like, I just thought he was a fucking one of them, do you know what I mean?
You thought he was coming from that Guy Ritchie world, and obviously...
And I just thought...
You didn't want that in your movie.
Well, I know, it wasn't so much that. I just don't really like people like that, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, really, am I going to have to put up with this cunt? But I met him, and he was all right. And then the more I got to work with him, I watched him do it, I realised, fuck, Irvin's right. He's actually brilliant. He's a brilliant director. So I'm so happy that I just acquiesced to that. You know what I mean?
And Irvin, was he always the writer?
I'm just going to tell you the truth. You know?
I love it, mate. I feel very blessed and privileged.
Yeah.
Was Irvin always going to be the script writer? Was that kind of a given from day one?
I think so. I don't think it would have got made if Irvin hadn't said yes. Do you know what I mean? Because Irvin, when I get a bit awkward about things, Irvin will just go, look, just trust me. And I've never double-guessed him, do you know what I mean? Because he's so right about all the stuff about films. Because he said, Irvin, and you know, Irvin brought Danny in. And do you know what I mean? You know, it's just, he got you in. So he made the right calls, you know what I mean?
Well, it's basically, aside from Nick, it's the Trainspotting team, isn't it? And
yeah.
I mean, that had to have been, that for you as like an ensemble of characters and creatives, was that the dream lineup?
I don't think that was the dream lineup. It just became the lineup. Do you know what I mean? But I'm glad it is the lineup. Do you know what I mean? I'm so glad because I don't have any problem with any of these people. I think they've done great. You know what I mean? Ewan Bremner played me amazing. Irvin's scripts with Dean Kavanagh is funny as fuck.
Mm-hmm.
you know, Danny Boyle. I've not even met Danny Boyle. Do you know that? I think he
still
must,
really.
I think he must think I'm a fucking football. Do you know what I mean? Because I've asked to meet him a couple of times, and like, he's just fucking ducked it. So I don't know. I mean, I know he's busy, but you know, I mean, I've never even fucking met him. But I don't think it matters. He did his job and pulled it all together for us. The minute Danny Boyle literally is when he looks like he made loads of changes to Nick's first rough cut. But the minute he said, I'm in as a, you know, as an advisor, executive producer, literally it was three different big companies offered to fund it. And remember when I talked to you 4 years ago, I think I said to you,
yeah,
there's a film on the offing. And you were probably like, really? And in my naivety, I probably thought it was going to get made at that point. But of course, films are fucking, that's what it's like, Matt. It's not easy. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, and it, all it takes is one person or one little bit of red tape to delay the whole thing for, you know, a year, 2 years.
It took 5 years for this film to come out. It's been getting worked on for 5 years.
Well, it's as you say, I think when you have that extra time in the edit room, because the edit room is obviously where the film comes to life, and to have that extra time in that stage, you're only going to be left with a stronger product at the end. I think it's definitely served the film well.
Yeah.
Let's talk about you and a little bit more. It must be weird and a trip watching somebody playing you, and you, I think you're never going to be fully satisfied because it's never going to be you. But what was your initial response when you saw the first rough cut of him being you?
Oh, he's got me. Do you know what I mean? I mean, the only criticism, I think he's 9.5 out of 10 on me. Brilliant.
Wow.
But the only thing is, I don't talk as posh as that. Do you know what I mean? And he's a little bit, you know, well, you know me now, so you know I'm not that posh, you know what I mean? But he's a little bit posh, isn't he? But I suppose for the English or the Americans, ultimately, you know, if he wasn't that little bit posh, it would be difficult to understand, you know what I mean?
Do you think they were perhaps as well trying to portray the character, you, as this, you know, and not that you're not, obviously, but as this really articulate, intelligent, strategic kind of...
Yeah, I mean, I don't. I mean, I'm intelligent, maybe. I'm a strategic, probably. I'm still punk as fuck. You know that. Mm-hmm. I mean, still by the seat of my pants half the time. You know, rock up to meetings, go, what the fuck's a meeting about? And somebody whispers to me, it's the Clockworks. All right, into Clockworks land. You know what I mean?
Yeah, fast and loose, shooting from the hip. And you know, I love that the film captures that energy of punk so much, because, you know, it's interesting to me that a lot of people, I think, know you or think about you as the Britpop guy, but, you know, that's not really your musical heart, is it?
No,
you obviously discovered Oasis, but, you know, you come from, as you say, punk rock and then, I guess, acid house.
That's it. That was my thing. Do you know what I mean? Both of these were, like, my big things. Do you know what I mean? Punk more than the acid house thing, but the acid house I loved. I was successful with acid house, weirdly. Do you know what I mean? And but the punk thing, I was just a kid. I was 15 when that was going on, but it so influenced me, Matt. Do you know what I mean?
How well did Nick nail Malcolm? He looks like he's having fun in that role.
He gets Malcolm to a T. He also does. I mean, he can do David Bowie or David Bowie. Fucking to a T as well, because he was friends with Bowie, and Nick gets David Bowie. Just fucking can do David Bowie. That's the thing about these actors, because I've never really known actors, not really, just now in the last few years I've now become pals with them, and they can that is their job, I suppose. They can just become that person, and he can do Alan McGee talking to Alan McGee. It's kind of weird. He does me talking to me, and I'm like, you know, that's fucking weird, right? You know what I mean?
Well, you mentioned actors there. I saw your little Instagram chat the other night with Thomas, and he's someone I'd love to talk to you about. He's a great guy. I've had him on the show, and you know, he's such a talented actor and funny dude, isn't he?
Brilliant. The two actors, other than Ewan's amazing, and he is the star of the show, but the other two that I go fucking hats off is Richard Jobson. As my dad.
Yeah.
Phenomenal performance. Because he nails my dad and he's never met my father. And Thomas is Dick Green. Thomas Turkhurst. Do you know what I mean? Both of these guys, just genius.
Thomas has some great one-liners, doesn't he? Some really... When he's when he's pilled up and you're in the cafe and he's going, what beat's this you're spinning, mate? And he goes, it's the dishwasher. And there's the other bit when he's visiting you in the rehab.
Do that bit in the cafe. That happened. As in,
it did.
Everybody in the acid.
Week in, week out.
Yeah. To like a fucking cafe and somebody would be playing Ride on Time. This is back in like 89 or something. And you'd be like almost dancing in the cafe. You'd be like fucking punching your ear. And you'd be like, because the E was still in you. Do you know what I mean? It was fucking, what a great fucking time, you know?
Well, I want to ask you this. When you watch the film back, does even a little part of you wish you could go back and pop an E and go to a rave and relive all of that chaos and craziness and fun?
I've thought about dropping an E in recent times. Just not a full E, just half an E. But do you know what? I can't do it. I tell you why I can't do it. Because if I do it, I fall down the hole again. Because I'm, you know what I'm like?
And that's what it was, you think, in that aspect, your personality couldn't say no after one.
Yeah.
Did the thing in the crack house really happen that way? Was that like the final push for you that sent you over?
That scene never. That's like this film isn't the Alan McGee Taylor creation. It's the Irvine Welsh Taylor creation, using me and the rest of the characters. Yeah, I mean, my book is my version.
Yeah, which I've read and is great.
He's taken my book and done his version. So you have to think. I mean, look, was I ever in crack houses? 100%. Was I in lots of crack houses? 200%. But, you know, did that particular thing happen with a guy with one leg? Kid knowing he was a beatbox? Not that I remember. You know what I mean? So you just have to, a lot of the films like that happened in the thing. But did that specific thing happen? No, it didn't. You know what I mean? So that's just Irvine, you know?
You know, when you look back at those times, do you think, and obviously, you know, we're not going to be condoning drugs here, but do you think there was more of a positivity to ecstasy in that whole scene than with things like obviously heroin and cocaine and crack? And
yeah,
did the E thing feel like a more positive scene?
There was initially, but it all became that. It all became crack and heroin and cocaine, because that's where we all went. You know, I mean, I didn't go to heroin, but in any real way, but I definitely went towards coke and crack, you know what I mean? And, you know, and that everybody had that journey. Primal Scream had a much darker journey. They all ended up junkies, to be honest, you know what I mean? So, you know, which he's cleverly left out of the book, out of the film. It's not that dark, is it? The journey's not that dark, you know?
No, the descent is quite sudden, and then you bounce back, and I think because the energy of the film is so upbeat, and you know that there's punk attitude throughout, and I don't think you'd want to take it down that somber route tonally, would you?
No, that's just Irvine. Whatever, wherever he was going with it, I was okay. But somebody was asking me a question today, you know, so on another podcast interview, and they were going, "Oh, were you always telling Irvine that that's in or that's not?" I never changed one thing in his script, because I realised, Matt, if you hire Irvine Welsh, you have to let Irvine Welsh be Irvine Welsh. You know, do you know what I mean? I mean, don't hire him if you don't want him to be Irvine. So that's the way that went. So some of it's just not me. I mean, I don't hate Tony Blair. Do you know what I mean? I had a good time, you know, in the 90s. I mean, he shouldn't have bombed Iraq. I accept that, and he fucked it up. But overall, I think he was pretty positive. So I'm not anti-Blair at all, but I give it to Blair in the film because it's Irvine. That's Irvine's version, you know what I mean?
What about Savile as well? Was that distinctly Irvine's attack? Actually, what was your experience of him, Alan?
That's actually pretty Catholic to what went down. Well, that's all true. I did an interview with Mojo last night, and they were going, is this true? Is that true? Is that true? And they got to Savile and I went, yeah, that happened. And they were like, what? That actually happened? I went, yeah. Because I'd get invited to a Checkers one weekend. It's a long story. If you really want me to go into it, it's actually quite a funny story. Do you want me to
go into it? Yeah, I've got all the time in the world. Let's do it.
So we may as well go into it. Right. So what happened was that I got about 6 weeks before that, I got a card from Cherie Blair, right? And I was a big Labour donor. Getting them about 100 grand a year, Matt, right? And I was selling a lot of records. I sold 60 million Oasis records. So I was like cash rich, I think you could say that. So anyway, so I was a big donor. And I got the card that me and Paul, she wanted me and Paul Smith, as in the fashion guy, right?
Yeah, yeah.
To take her to London Fashion Week. Now, I couldn't get, I'm sitting in a tracksuit now, right? Couldn't give a fuck about fashion. Like, yeah, you don't care either, right? But anyway, so I didn't want to go, but Kate wanted to go. So she said, oh, I want to go. And I'm like, all right, well, we're gone. And I knew it would be a political weird one, right? But anyway, we phoned up the General Secretary of the Labour Party, Margaret McDonagh, who I'm friends with. I went, oh, like, Kate wants to come. And you could hear in her voice that it was going to be difficult. And anyway, they left it to the very last minute. And it was the Monday of Fashion Week that I was supposed to do it. And on the Friday, they phoned me up and went, Kate can't come. So she got on the phone to the General Secretary of the Labour Party and went, fuck you. And I tell you what, don't ever fucking ask him for money again. Fuck you and fuck you. One day, right? So
amazing.
The Monday, the Tuesday.
I can see why you two got on.
So the Monday, the Tuesday, we get the invite to Tony Blair. Do you want to come and have dinner with us at Checkers in 2 weeks' time? So I was like, I've no problem with Tony Blair. I like him. So I went, all right, we'll go. So we go on down to have dinner with Tony Blair, and we knew there was a few other people coming. We knew that John O'Farrell, the writer, was going, and a Dame Judi Dench and people like that. It was a bit fucking mad, kind of lovey. It was a Labour lovey's fucking dinner, right? And I suppose I was a lovey at the time, right? So anyway, so it was there. Anyway, so I'm standing talking to Blair because I've got there before everybody else because I'm OCD, right? So if it's 31 minutes past seven, I'm fucking there, right? And Blair comes down the stairs and me and him are chatting for 10 minutes. And then suddenly at the door, Matt, just as in the film, Now then. I look round and it's fucking Jimmy Savile, right? And I'm like, what the fuck? So I actually said to Blair, it's fucking got surreal, and he kind of laughed. And then Jimmy Savile comes in and introduces himself and then sits at the fucking table. And we all had places to sit. And he had come with a security guy, a guy that's in charge of security for him. Can't remember his name. So I was sitting at one end of the table. And at these posh dinners, you don't sit with your missus. You get split up. So Kate was at the other end. And the whole dinner, Jimmy Savile, I'm told, according to her, was hitting on her the whole night. Do you know what I mean? And I'm fucking... So he was... She's a fucking lech. Do you know what I mean?
And assumedly, you'd heard all about him through Malcolm, who'd heard about it through John and...
No, I didn't. I mean, I'd heard one story, he was a necrophiliac. That was it. We didn't know he fucked kids or anything like that. Maybe it's just, I don't know why. I didn't really know. I'd heard a weird story that he was a necrophiliac, right? But I'd no idea that he was a fucking nonce. No idea whatsoever. You know, so I thought even the necrophiliac story was probably to somebody fucking hated him and made it up. I didn't really believe it at the time, do you know what I mean? I mean, the truth is always stranger than fiction, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? And didn't really believe it. But then when I met him, he's a kind of gangstery guy, mate. Do you know what I mean? He was like, come to the security guy, and he was like, he was just a Ned. Do you know what that means? A Ned, a Scottish, just a snide guy, man. You know what I mean? Yeah. So that's that. That was that night. That happened.
Yeah, there's the scene when he appears. There's a heaviness. There's a blanket of heaviness which takes over the film at that point.
Yeah. You know, that was really hard to cast, that Jimmy Savile thing, Matt.
Because who is it? Is it anyone known? Whoever it is great.
Something. He's quite well known, but Rhys Evans turned it down and loads of people turned it down. Rhys Evans turned it down, my friend.
Yeah.
I love it. But nobody wanted to play Savile.
Yeah, it's a tricky one, isn't it?
I'm glad, to be absolutely honest. I'm actually glad it's in.
Yeah, no, definitely. How good is, I don't know the lad's surname, but he's another member of the This Is England cast. He was in that movie Svengali you were in.
He plays Joe.
And he plays Joe. He is amazing.
Yeah, he's a good guy, yeah.
Was Joe really like that? Was he that intense and high wired? And
That's a smooth version of Joe.
Really?
Yeah. Joe's quite mental. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, you know, Joe's always been fucking mad. Joe was mad before the fucking drugs. Do you know what I mean?
Well, the first time we spoke, I was asking you about television personalities, and we kind of bonded over that because I love them as well. But I didn't know that they were the guys that you formed Creation with. I'd never put that together.
Yeah.
So it's basically like half that band was your team, wasn't it?
Yeah. And you know what's great about it? I think this film really bigs them up in a good way. Do you know what I mean?
Well, rightly so as well. And they're one of those bands, I think, that, you know, a lot of people don't know about, do they?
Yeah.
And I guess they were the band for you. You were telling me that, you know, married psychedelic music and art with punk energy. And that for you was really the template for the whole Creation label, right?
Yeah, totally. I mean, if they get the props, that's totally deserved, man. Do you know what I mean?
Cameo-wise, you're not in it, are you? I was like waiting and watching and hoping, when's McGee going to pop up? How come?
I don't know. I mean, I got asked, but I just decided.
I bet you did.
Yeah, I just decided not to do it and just like do the film. I want to kind of see. This is Irvin's version of Creation, and he's his vision of Creation. You know, like somebody said to me, that whole speech at the end about the rebel thing and stuff like that, was that you, McGee? And I went, no, I would say people just make sure you can feed your kids. You know what I mean? So we are quite differently in Irvin. He's a communist, I'm not. But it's fine. It's like, it's kind of like, he's like the cool wing of the whole thing. And I think that's cool, you know what I mean?
Was it you who suggested Bricks? Because I know you two are friends, and I've had Bricks on the show since we had you on.
I talked to you the other day. No, that was Nick Moran's friends.
Right.
Nick Moran got in.
It's a perfect fit because I know you two are close. How did you and Bricks meet? Did you meet in rehab?
No. Met her in 1988 in Phonogram record offices. She was in the adult net coming out the fall, and I was managing House of Love. And then we met up then, and then she was one of Kate's girlfriends when I started going out with Kate, who had just come out of that band, Praise Your Chorus, as we were saying. And then I started going out with her, and then I became mates with the Bricks. So that's how I know her.
That's wild. And she's great in the movie. She's got a really cool little part. Are there any other cameos that I've missed?
Yeah.
Was there anybody else from the music scene in there?
Yeah, there's loads in there. Carol Barat.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Boss. Gary Powell at the end is the black TV producer. That's Gary Powell. Who else? There's Joanna, my friend, who's she's not really in music. She's a modelly actress. She's the one that's sitting on the stair, and when I'm trudging up the stairs,
and she's shooting up.
Yeah. That's Joanna. And who else is in it? Yeah, there's loads. And then Lily Robinson, who lives around here, who's Bruce Robinson's daughter, is the good-looking chick that Ewan takes to the toilet. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's Willow Robinson's sister, Bruce Robinson's daughter, you know.
And the female journalist character, is that a combination of real people, one real person? Is that any sort of factual...
No, it's not factual. That's Irvin again. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. He's just doing that as a way to tell the story. But
he's a master, isn't he?
They're kind of all like that, if you know what I'm trying to say. Do you know what I mean?
Yep.
But he's good at going, this is what a female journalist in the 90s kind of was like. And he's right. They kind of were like that. Do you know what I mean?
Quite flirtatious and...
Yeah. I mean, more flirtatious than they are now. Now they're just like, you know, this is the business, which is fine. But back then, they were a little bit flirtatious, you know what I mean?
And Jason Fleming's great as the guy who owns King Tut.
Oh, yeah, that's Jason Fleming. I don't even...
Another Lockstock connection.
Yeah.
And then Jason Isaac is the guy who takes, you know, you to the crack house. He's the movie producer,
dude. Yeah.
I saw you on your Instagram thing with Thomas the other day. I was like, damn, he's telling the story on there, because it's one of my favorite stories from your book. I wonder if you wouldn't mind going over it now. You're basically in the studio, you're, you know, there, and there's this dude in there, and he's asking you to check out some of his music, and you don't know who it is. And...
Oh, Joaquin. Well, I don't know how we got to that. He said his favorite film was Walk the Line. And I went, well, I've got a good story about Walk the Line. And I was in Los Angeles. What was I doing? I don't know what I was doing. But I'd been up to all sorts, right? I think it was about January 2008, just before the Grammys, or the Oscars. It would be the Oscars, sorry, right? And anyway, I was going out with Kirsten Dunst, makeup artist, for dinner. We have big pals, right? This beautiful girl called Nellie Kim. She's like massive makeup artist, right? So she shows up at the hotel, the Mondrian, with this 100 grand car, right? And I'm like, oh, nice. And she jumped in this fucking mad car. I don't drive, but I do like nice cars, right? And we're driving up Sunset, and I'm like, this could be a good night, right? And she goes, do you mind coming to my friends, some actors? Do they want to play you some music? And I was like, okay, thinking, oh, I was wanting to go to Toy to sit in Sunset and get some nice Thai food, but okay. She goes, I'll order it, I'll pay. I was like, all right, whatever. So we go up to Hollywood Hills, and we go to a pretty humble little house, right? So no idea that we're going to meet anybody, right? And we go on in, and there's these two guys, and one of them's a beautiful English guy with cheekbones, right? And he goes, hello, I'm Anthony. I was in Space Hog. Anthony Langdon, you know, and he just looks like a pop star. He looks great, to be honest. I'm like, all right, Anthony, I met you with Oasis. And I'm thinking, you never fucking met me with Oasis, but whatever, right, all right. And this little dumpy guy goes, I'm a key feet, something like that, but he goes, I'm a key. And he kind of said something, and he probably was putting it on, to be fair, you know, some mad wee voice. And I was like, all right, and he could, in my head, if I don't want to be there, I'm terrible, right? So I was like, oh, fucking couple of idiots here, right? Here we go. So I get wheeled into the fucking studio, and she's ordering me the food. And they start playing me these tracks that are kind of like Pearl Jam doing Bowie, right? The songs are actually all right. And the wee guy, he's at the desk fucking sorting out the sound, and Anthony's sitting by me, and Nelly Kim's sitting with me now. And halfway through, so every song, because I don't want to be there, I'm fucking slaughtering it, man. I'm going, oh, fucking, if you had, okay, how do I sort out? Throw the bass off, get rid of that fucking terrible guitar, do it, you know, put it acoustic, make it claustrophobic. I was just telling them without any niceties what they should fucking do, right? And about halfway through, but he got about 7 or 8 in, and you could see the wee guy at the desk. It's went from being in shock that I don't like anything to actually now being into me telling him he's a cunt, right? So Kirsten Dunst comes in and pays homage to the guy at the desk. And at that point, I'm like, that's a bit weird, right? Because even I know who Kirsten Dunst is, and I don't know about anything in films, right? But she's paying homage to this guy. Fuck, he must be somebody's. But anyway, doesn't stop me. Fucking slaughter everything, right? To play about 20 songs. At the end of the night, it's about an hour and a half in, I go, well, I've got to go back to the hotel. And as I'm leaving, they line up. And by this time, the little guy's loving it, right? Fucking loving it, right? So Anthony goes, Anthony Langdon. All right, Anthony, see you later, right? And this wee guy goes, Wacky Phoenix. And I heard Phoenix, right? And I was like, maybe it's something to do with River Phoenix. Didn't crack on, never asked her. Went back to the hotel, went back to the Standard, logged on, went into Google, put River Phoenix in, looked for fucking relatives, and sure enough, Joaquin Phoenix is the fucking brother. And then I click on Joaquin Phoenix, and he's about to win a fucking Oscar for fucking I Walk the Line, right? And at that point, I was like, right, okay, you know, I mean, and so I did. I didn't even feel like a melon because I just didn't know who it was. I went to bed thinking, kind of funny, whatever. Right? And then a week later, I got back to England, and then I got phoned one morning about 8 in the morning, midnight there, And him and Anthony were out having a burger or fucking drink, whatever, probably a drink when we came out. And he goes, Ellen, I want you to come back to Los Angeles. We want you to produce the record. And I'm like, I'm not a fucking producer. I'm like a manager. And he went, no, you're a producer. And that was the beginning of me and Joaquin working with each other. Do you know what I mean?
And I love the way you end the story there. Like, so what happens with that relationship? You go out and assumedly you work on a record with him.
Yeah, I hung with him for a couple of years. We made three different records. I think one of them eventually came out, not under his name. Anthony's his best friend. And I think the band was called, this is a long time ago, was it 12 years ago? I think the band was called Victoria or something like that. But basically, it's Joaquin. He'd never admit it, but he writes the songs and Anthony sings them at that point. And then when he'd done that hip-hop movie, mm-hmm. I'm here, Anthony's in that. And the guy that Joaquin's abusing and shouting at, right, he's basically the fluffer, isn't he? And that's Anthony. You know?
That's a wild film, that is. And he goes to the edge with
you
that.
You know what? Paul, he was conceptualizing that for a year or 2 years, because I hung out with him for 2 or 3 years, and he was conceptualizing that film with me and Anthony and Bolowski. We were all hanging out a lot in LA around that time, and he knew that there's something like that. That wasn't a shock that film got made, because it kind of was like that anyway for quite a lot of it. Do you know what I mean? And what, I mean, that guy's got a really sharp sense of humor. Do you know what I mean?
Are you still in touch with him? And what did you think of his Joker performance?
I haven't seen Joaquin for years, literally. I mean, 5 years, 10 years, somewhat. Like, quite a long time. But if I'm in Los Angeles, I need to go and see him. Do you know what I mean? He still lives in the same house. But he's changed now. I mean, he's married with a kid. I mean, it's like, he was quite wild when I knew him back in that late part of that decade. Do you know what I mean?
And you weren't, you were sober by that point, right?
Sober, but I was up for the crack. Do you know what I mean? As in.
Not actual crack, just a good time.
It's really good nights. But took the Libertines up there when they were, Carol had become the Dirty Pretty Things, took them up to meet Joaquin, and that was a legendary night. Do you know what I mean? Probably not for your podcast, though.
Mate, hasn't life taken you to some amazing places?
What's that?
Hasn't life taken you to some amazing places with some amazing people?
Yes. Half the time when I'm doing it, I don't realise that until way after it. Go, that was kind of special, do you know what I mean?
I think that's the best way, because otherwise you overanalyze in the moment, don't you?
Yeah.
Love it. Love it, love it. Hey, I want to tell you a story. You can tell me whether or not this is true. I was reading that Gene Simmons, and this, because it's Gene, I believe it, obviously the bandwagon-esque album cover Teenage Fan Club is a bag of money with a dollar sign.
Them.
That's true, is it?
True.
And Geffen paid out.
I don't think it was that. It was. He might have got 2,000 or something. He didn't get a lot of money. He didn't get 200,000. Do you know what I mean? I think he got a payout. Do you know what I mean?
That's the most Gene Simmons move.
I mean, I'm going to sue you for like the dollar sign. Do you know what I mean? Crazy. That was true.
Kevin Shields.
Yeah.
Tell me about that dude. I love the section in the film. I think it captures the stress of that situation beautifully.
It didn't really go down like that. Do you know what I mean? He did. I did go to the studio one time and you know. God, this is good. I haven't actually really thought about it. I don't think I went. I think I got told I wasn't welcome. I think that's what happened. And I don't think I actually went down. That's probably what happened. But Irvin in the books, you know what Irvin's like. So it's like I get taken away by the police. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. And you're ranting about, you know, this guy. I mean, was that the time when the label was really pressurized financially because of the budget of that record running so high? Yeah.
I mean, Kettle, that's an amazing record, and I don't regret spending the money, because it was such a great record. But, you know, it was one man's vision, and we could have been fucked, you know. Luckily, we were quick and we got out of it. So, you know what I mean? And luckily, it's a fucking great record, you know.
Dick seemed like that time period stressed him out from the part in the film. He's like, I had to remortgage my house.
Yeah, I don't think that happened. But you know what? Around that time, Dick, this is true, completely true, sorry. Dick built a hut in the accounts department. I mean, it was an accounts department room at the top of the building. Big room, and about four or five people were sitting there doing the fucking contracts and the accounts and all this fucking nonsense, right? And the record companies now are just me and an assistant. Do you know what I mean? I mean, it's totally different, right? But anyway, there was like, they're all sitting doing their contracts and doing their VAT and all that. About four people definitely are sitting upstairs doing all that. And Dick's built a hut in a room, like a proper garden hut in a room. I mean, that shows you where Dick's fucking mind had went. That he thought that he could shut out the fucking people asking for money, Matt. Do you know what I mean?
Was he a total insane genius, Kevin Shields? Was he about as far out there as anyone you've ever worked with?
Yeah, it was one man in his vision. Do you know what I mean? He's a genius. I'm not saying he's not. He's a total genius. Yeah, I mean, I suppose to make records that good, you've just got to be utterly selfish. And that's what it felt like, that being on the receiving end of it. Do you know what I mean? It felt very, like, you don't care about it as much. I don't think he fucking did. But it didn't really matter because the record was great, you know what I mean? And it sold and we got our money back and we all lived happily ever after. And me and Kevin actually are all right with each other now. Well, I'm all right with him, do you know what I mean?
And he went on to play with Primal Scream for quite a while, right? And tour with them. And
yeah, he did, yeah. Yeah.
And, how cool is it that, you know, and it's touched on lovely in the film, but, you know, you've grown up and gone to school with the guys in Primal Scream and they're your old friends. And then off the back of Teenage Fan Club and My Bloody Valentine, you have this game-changing, era-defining, you know, timeless record of Screamadelica. Yeah. And it's your old pals from school. That must still be like a very cool, proud detail in your life.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I mean, it's like, and also, it goes deeper than that. Me and Andrew, we were in a band and we came to London together. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, really, we go, you know, Bob's my oldest friend. Him and a guy called Colin Dobbins that lives in Perth. You know, they're like my old buddies. But me and Innes are like, we've got a real bond because we came to London, you know, and we survived it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, when you're down in the trenches with someone and you go through an experience like that, it shapes you for life, doesn't it? And when you go through it with someone else, that's a bond that is lifelong and unbreakable.
Yeah. No, I mean, we're good. But me and all that band are like, you know, I mean, there's only two of them, the original people now left in that band. But yeah, I mean, it's always been it's kind of my skill mix, you know what I mean? You know?
Do you believe in magic, Alan?
Yeah, I mean, do I really believe in magic? Ultimately, no, but I had a good go at it. Do you know what I mean? You know, do you know what? I'm not spooked by it because I've had a really good go at it and it's worked for me a few times, but it's not me. I'm not that dark. Do you know what I mean? You know?
Yeah, you think it's a lot of just right time, right place, right people, right circumstances all coming together.
Oh, you mean you? I thought you were talking about Crowley and chaos magic. Oh, you're talking about...
No, I'm talking, yeah, more just like the...
Oh, no, you're talking about fate.
Yeah,
yeah,
destiny.
I believe that happens. I mean, so many... You've got to be in it to win it, Matt. Do you know what I mean? Because I'm curious and because I love music... I was out on a Sunday night in 1993 at King Tut's. Do you know what I mean? And because I'm OCD, I was watching all my little bands and the support bands. But, you know, but when Oasis showed up, I was smart enough to go, fucking hell, I'll have that. Do you know what I mean? So, you know what I mean? You know, so I kind of do believe in fate. You know what I mean?
Do you think if Oasis had signed with a more square manager...
Yeah.
Somebody that was going to rein them in, tell them off, try and straighten them out. Do you think things would have wound up differently? Perhaps there would have been less drama and or less success. And because I think a big part of that story was the chaos, right? And you obviously were from that same school of the rock and roll happen.
My role in it was record company guy that signed to records and signed to publishing as well, actually, right? but I never managed a Marcus. They did have a very normal manager, as in a normal guy. You know, he's a nice guy actually, and good manager. But I think what I brought to it, if I brought anything to it at all, was the main thing I brought to it is I didn't try and change the genius of it, because a lot of record companies try and change you, and I never did that with them. I realised it'll either work or it'll fucking fail. You just gotta have to go and just hope that it fucking works. And it worked. Do you know what I mean? But don't try and change it. And I didn't try and change it. Do you know what I mean? I just went, okay, it's either genius or it's a fucking ball over the bar. Here we go. And we scored. Do you know what I mean?
I'd say you scored pretty big, yeah. One of my favourite parts in the Supersonic documentary is where Noel's recounting the story of when they're on a ferry going over to Ireland, I think it is, and they all get arrested because of a big fight breaking out on the boat.
Yeah.
And that he said he called you, and there was like a pause, and then just your response was one word, brilliant. And I love that so much.
That's great. I mean, I love Noel for that drop up in Supersonic. Do you know what I mean? You know, because it's like, to that new generation Oasis fans, they only know me for that one fucking thing. Do you know what I mean? Because you get 22-year-old kids coming up to me quite a lot going, brilliant. And you're like, all right, okay, well, you know what I mean? That's Noel giving me the fucking cool nod. I think because I didn't try and change it. I probably encouraged it sometimes, you know what I mean, you know? And it worked. It's exactly what we needed at that one point in culture. You know, we needed a wild band, you know?
Did you feel like you kind of missed out on the party because you were obviously having to get straight as everything was blowing up? Is there any regret there that, oh, I wish I could have been around more for that because that's what I'd worked all that time towards? Or had you sort of done it by that point and you were out?
When I was young, in my 30s, I was like, oh, fucking hell, man. You know, I had to choose 1994 to get fucking off drugs and drink. But retrospectively looking back, if I had behaved like I did when Screamadelica came out, I would never have kept Oasis, because when Screamadelica came out, there was no adults in the room. Do you know what I mean? Like, everybody was mad. Their manager was, well, I was their manager up to about 92, and then I gave it to a guy called Nightingale who was managing them. He was mad. I was mad. The band was psychotic. Do you know what I mean? Well, just fucking mad band. Well, really mad. And we were collectively mental, and why it kind of worked as much as anything. But you weren't going to get this. You weren't going to get the band were not going to leave you because you were mental. Do you know what I mean? But if I'd behaved like that around Definitely Maybe, I'd have got fucking shocked. Do you know what I mean?
So you were okay to not be a part of that party.
I think
it was the right call.
I think for the money, I was sober, do you know what I mean?
So you managed to cash out of the Britpop era with, you know, a life of security. Yeah. And
I did all right. I got sober before I got sold all the records. So I've basically still got it, you know, I've got it on houses and all that stuff, you know what I mean?
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
How about when you did get sober? Were any friendships, like, you know, stretched or tested? Because I know sometimes when your friendship with someone is based on, you know, drug experiences, was it hard to maintain that friendship with certain bands or individuals when you did get clean?
Not with Oasis, because I've only known them since 93. '94. So they just knew me as the record company guy. But with the Primals, it was very difficult because they never got sober for about another 13, 14 years. They never all cleaned up to about 2008, you know.
So it was tricky, was it? Did that put a bit of distance between you?
It was a difficult relationship for a long time. If we'd really been honest with each other, we probably never really got it back. Do you know what I mean? But because once you break, you never... I mean, we're close and we've got great shared history, but do you know what I mean? We don't hang, do you know what I mean? I mean, Innes and me are a little bit more, but you know what I'm trying to say? That whole... We were so intensely close on the run-up to Screamadelica, Give Out, Don't Give Up. And then it kind of, I got clean, and then I think they thought at the time, they get it. They all had to get clean. But I think they saw it as like, oh, he's left. You know what I mean? He's dumped us, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think maybe sometimes it, you know, you just need to be in the room, don't you, together? And
yeah,
then those friendships return. But, you know, sometimes people also just change, don't they? And your paths splinter off and... As I've gotten older, I've learned that myself, as is life, right?
Well, I know your story. I mean, you had the accident and then you got yourself back and kind of incredible, Matt. Do you know what I mean? Also, you're like a really strong individual, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, thanks, Alan. I did a podcast yesterday myself where I was guesting and I was talking to this girl about the theme of the show was perseverance and resilience and determination. And I think that's something I've always seen and really respected and admired in you. And it's, you know, definitely something that I'm proud of in myself is that ability to just, if you get knocked up, you know, knocked over, dust yourself off, get back up and let's go again.
Similar characters, but I mean, when Anita told me your whole story and it says a lot about you, man, that you never know who you are till you're fucking ill, really proper ill. Do you know what I mean? With me, it was, I've been ill a couple of times, but that one was like when I had the drug addiction and the breakdown, and I had 9 months out, man, and that was like, couldn't access my energy. Do you know what I mean? That was heavy. Do you know what I mean?
During that time, how did you manage to pull yourself out, and who was there to help you? And if you could talk us through that journey of hitting rock bottom and somehow finding your way back to the light. Because the film kind of gets over that quite quickly, doesn't it? It's sort of
done it myself, Matt. Do you know what I mean? Really, do you know what I mean? With a bit of help from family, but I did it myself ultimately. Do you know what I mean? Because you've got to do it yourself, these situations. You can't, that's not something you can offload mental health. You've got to deal with it, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I believe that wholeheartedly. And as much as it helps to have, you know, supportive friends around you and sympathetic ears, ultimately, if you don't want to like get yourself straight and you're not willing to put in the groundwork, you're fucked, aren't you?
Yeah, I mean, it's so easy on one level to say it, but it's fucking hard to do. But you just got to lay down the drink and the drugs, and eventually your fucking body recalibrates and you're all right. It might take you years, but you eventually have all the anxiety and the depression. It does eventually fuck off. Do you know what I mean?
Is it all sort of cleared for you now? Are you in a very whole and happy and strong position in yourself? Or do you still get those inklings from time to time where you feel the darkness creeping in?
I'm old. I was on prescription drugs for years, but I got off them as well. You know what I mean? Losing the weight's the latest part of me getting my shit together. Do you know what I mean? You know, I tell you one of the reasons I've done it as well, apart from like COVID, it's a good idea to be skinny when COVID's about. But there's a guy I'm friends with, BBC Manchester. He's like the old version of you, man, right? And Mike Sweeney, and he's about 72. But he's the big BBC Manchester morning DJ, and I'm friends with him, and he used to put these pictures up of himself, and he looks about fucking 50 because he's fit as fuck, right? And I was like, how do you do it? And he was going, oh, I do this and I do that. And I just thought, you're 10 years or 12 years younger than this fucker. Get it together. And of course I did. Do you know what I mean? But it was that. I told Mike that recently. I went, you were the inspiration. And he was like, no way. You know what I mean? And I think you can be old and look good. I think it's possible. Do you know what I mean?
I also think, and you've shown this to not just me, but I'm sure everybody follows you on Instagram and, you know, those online platforms, I think as much as there's bad sides to them, there's also a lot of positivity. And I think this transformation that you've shown can happen. It's a lifestyle change that you can also make at any age as well, not just to get fitter, but also to just better yourself and enjoy, you know, the quality of life to the highest of its available degree.
Yeah, I mean, the truth is, I mean, it's great if I am inspiring anybody, but I'm kind of just doing it for myself. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, you got to do it for yourself first and foremost. But I think in the process of doing that, other people see it and they go, like you did, like, I want a bit of that.
And I was like, I sponsor the team down here in Wales, Hayson, right? And the guy that's the main guy at the club is about 53, 54, right? And I met him coming out of Tesco the other day, right? And he was like, oh, you're embarrassing me, McGee. Look at you. You know, you're... Because he's got a bit
Show
of,
me up.
A stomach on him at the moment. He's a fit guy, Martin Tong, but he's got a bit of stomach on him. Do you know what I mean? And it's a bit like... It's stuff like that, that we all look at each other and go, oh, I better get myself sorted. Do you know what I mean? You know?
It's good to lead by example sometimes, you know, and reformed hellraisers sometimes can become shining lights of good behavior and positive lifestyle changes. And
you get old by being out of shape, to be honest. I don't think, you know, I mean, if you're trying to get to about be an old person like 75, 80, I think you've got to get in shape. Do you know what I mean?
I think it's also fun to reinvent yourself, and I like that you've taken to wearing the tracksuits and embraced that look as well. You know, there was kind of like the Trilby thing going on in the noughties, and now it's the era of the tracksuit, and you wear it well, my friend.
I just get sent them all the time. I've got about 100 fucking tracksuits, Matt. Do you know what I mean? You know?
Tell me about your plans, if it's not too depressing to talk about it. You must have had some amazing plans for the premiere of this film, if it could have gone ahead.
You know what? It never really got to that stage.
It didn't.
It didn't really. It was like, it was all, I mean, this is not me. I mean, I'm like, I'd have just shown up, dude, because it's like, ultimately, I'm weird about this film in one way. I mean, I'm a bit like, I think it's Irvin's thing. He probably thinks it's my thing, but I think it's Irvin's thing. So if nobody showed up, I don't see it as a diss on me. Do you know what I mean? I'd be like, whatever. But yeah, the film producers were like, oh, is Liam going to show up? Is Noel going to, all that stuff that, fuck, you know what it's like? Well, these fucking film producers and all that box, you know what I mean? But I see, I just always saw it as Irvin's thing. So that's how I can, you know, I mean, that's how I can stand back for it and just, I don't hate it, which is the best compliment I can pay that film. Could you imagine? I mean, I think Tony hated 24 Hour Party People. I think
did he?
Sean likes it. So they're all in it and they don't like it. I can live with this, you know what I mean?
I think, I don't know whether I'm reading too much into it, but I would have thought if you get to sort of see your life play out on film and, you know, be removed from it enough to sort of look back at what you've achieved and done, there must be a little bit of a sense of pride that, you know, that your life's work has actually amounted to something pretty cool. And I presume you maybe knew that already, but it must be a very validating and quite cool thing to see, like, oh wow, I sort of made all these things in my own way happen.
Yeah, I mean, it was a crazy period, that period, and then on for that, then it was like the Hives, the Libertines, blah blah blah, up to about 2008 it was like boom boom boom, and then I came down and here for 5 years, brought Charlie up, wrote the book, went back, and then suddenly I was like, Mary Chain want me to manage them Mondays, blah blah blah, do you know what I mean? It was like, It was all that. And I was like, you know, but that period up to about 2008 from 1980 was fucking mad. Do you know what I mean? Coming to London, living in a fucking squat, starting a club, doing creation, breaking the Mary Chain, the journey, finding Oasis, the journey, ended up in the British fucking government. Do you know what I mean? And like, you know, making a lot of cash, which was a big one. And then like on for that, do you know what I mean? You know, like doing all that other stuff, like the Libertines. It's crazy, you know what I mean?
It's amazing, mate. It's so amazing.
Yeah, it's good.
And the Hives as well, like, you know, that period of your life isn't in the film, but Pop Tones and, I mean, the Hives, really, obviously along with the Strokes and the Libertines and the White Stripes, but they were one of the last, I think, really great, exciting guitar bands that reinvented the wheel for one of the last times, and you were a part of that as well with the Libertines and them.
Yeah, that was great. That was a great time. That was a great time for music. We thought at the time that it was going like that, but it was the last time that bands were breaking through, really, wasn't it? You know what I mean?
It was, and do you think there'll ever be a time like that again, especially after fucking COVID and now Brexit? Do you think there's any hope for UK musicians rising up now to get to those levels of the Arctic Monkeys or Oasis or bands like that again?
Bands break through, but, you know, I'm not sure it'll be culturally that big. Do you know what I mean? I'm not sure. I mean, you know, like, you've got BBC Six, it's kind of Guardian music, isn't it? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I feel very, not disheartened, because, you know, I do think that I grew up in the last great time for guitar music, and I'm just grateful for that. But I don't feel any excitement about anything that's happening now within the rock and the indie and the punk and any of those genres. Yeah. All the best stuff's happened, I think. What do you think?
Let's hope there's another resurgence. I mean, I'm finding lots of great little bands. And I'm putting records out, and I'm still into my thing, but I don't know if Andy's paying any attention. You know what I mean? I'm enjoying it, which is probably the pass mark. But God knows, I don't know if Andy. I mean, I'm putting records out in the middle of lockdown. Do you know what I mean? I mean, fuck knows if, I don't know. I don't even know if I'm being sensible, but I'm just. It's all. You know what? I'm being sensible. It keeps me sane, Matt. If I was just not doing anything, I'd go fucking mad. The fact that I'm putting out a single a month, I've got Charlie Clark coming in Friday, it kind of keeps me sane. And I've got a Kyle Faulkner big pop album coming out in Townsend. So that's next month. So, yeah, the first big single drops next month. That keeps me in the here and now, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm exactly the same. You know, the only thing that's kept me focused and happy is, yeah, interviewing people, connecting with people, podcasting, and then writing my book, and just staying, as you say, present and connected and excited about things that, you know, distract from the doom and gloom that seems to be coming in from all angles at the moment.
So to answer that, yeah, I mean, actually, I'm doing the right thing, because if I wasn't doing it, I would be like, oh, do you think I'm going to... Yeah, I mean, I've managed to keep connected to my muse, I suppose. Do you know what I mean?
Are you on your own? Have you spent the last year basically isolated, sort of?
Yeah.
On your Jack Jones, how have you found that?
To be honest, I've enjoyed it. Because I've been meeting 5-6 different people for walks, and so it's been good. I mean, I'm out. I leave the house in London. I know you're always supposed to go for an hour, but I leave the house about 9 in the morning and come back at 6 at night.
You just walk all day, do you?
Yeah, I walk to Earl's Court, walk to Kensington, walk to, you know, Marylebone, walk back, do 15 miles along the river, and
just doing all your business on your phone.
Yeah, do meetings, do podcasts, and walking about London, and then you know, get back, make some dinner, go to bed. I'm going to bed about 9 o'clock at night. During the lockdown, are you doing that?
I've been fluctuating a lot, because it depends for me what I'm doing during the day. When I was writing my book, I'd be up till about 1 or 2 a.m. because my mind would just be racing, you know, because I'd been transcribing and thinking all day and night. But I found now I'm sort of easing out of the book writing and getting back more into the podcast recording, as I spend all day preparing for a conversation like this. And then when I finish the chat, I'm then quite exhausted because the, you know, the adrenaline has gone and I can just sort of crash. And so now I'm probably going off at about 10, which is nice. Because then you get up early, don't you?
Oh, yeah. You know, I've got to bed about 8:30, 9. And then getting up about 7. You know what I mean? In London, 6:30. And so it's, I mean, when it comes back properly, God, let's hope it's this year. But when everything comes back, we'll all be like touring, going to restaurants, eating late, blah, blah, blah. So God knows if I will maintain 40 pounds off, but I'm not going to eat now. Do you know what I mean? I've done it. But do you know what I mean? It's going to be a different thing. I mean, but you know what? I mean, look, I think we'll be lucky to get back this year. I don't know about you, but I think we will be lucky to get back this year. I think the Tories are letting people think they're back in the summer, but I don't see it really. But in rock and roll, I don't see it. Let me put it that way. But if we end up getting back at the end of the year or early next year, we'll almost been out for 2 years, mate. Do you know what I mean? A long time.
Yeah, it's a very long time, and the long term implications of that are just bewildering. You know, from the crew side to the venue side. Just to the type of music that will be getting written. The one thing that really excites me, Alan, is I feel like we're in this age now of real desperation and bleak prospects for a lot of people that in the past, I think that's helped create some really exciting, vital art. And I just do hope that, you know, that the energy that's around at the moment is channeled in that way into, you know, maybe the new punk movement. Whether it's with guitars or not might be a different thing, but I do feel like the conditions are in place at the moment, aren't they, for another wave of angry, young, politicized artists to be coming out and spitting what they think in the face of the establishment.
Wearing masks.
Yeah, yeah. So actually spitting back at themselves.
Let's hope we're out here, Matt. You know what I mean? It's like, I mean, people are hurting. Do you know what I mean? Anita's hurting. Do you know what I mean? And, like, you know, Jamie's hurting. They're all, like, you know, close to me. And it's like, you know, they're hurting at the moment because nobody's worked for like a year, you know?
Yep. What's next for you? Is there anything that you feel at the back of your mind you'd still like to lend your hand to and have a stab at? Well, you're 60 now, right, Alan?
I'm going to rock on doing this till I'm 75, if I can get away with it. Seymour got away with it till he's 75, so I don't see why I can't. Do you know what I mean? There's a documentary coming. Dre, my pal, the photographer, big Hollywood photographer guy that I'm friends with, has been filming me for about 7 years.
Right.
On camera and started filming me. Did you meet him that time? I think he maybe walked up to, and then he went for a wander and then he came back. Do you remember that time?
In Soho?
Yeah.
I think Dre was... I didn't meet him, but he was with you that day, was he?
He was. I think he was. But anyway, Dre filmed it and then the BBC just picked it up because I don't know if it would usually have been picked up by the BBC, Matt, but because nothing's been filmed for a year, they're running out of content. So this was all shot before the pandemic. And so I think that's coming this year, do you know what I mean? Yeah.
Wow, so you'll have a movie and a documentary out in 1 year.
In lockdown, kind of how mad's that?
That's amazing. At 60 as well. How many other people that, you know, mature old age can say that they're at the front line of cinema and television and, you know, they're being talked about and written about? And I mean, a little part of you must be quite excited and thrilled by that.
You know, my friend's got a documentary on Sky on Saturday night. You should watch it. Nightingales, Rob Lloyd. Do you know that band?
They've been burning. No. Are they really?
It's like, it used to be this punk band, The Prefix, and he'd been in this band for 35 years called The Nightingales. They were kind of like The Fall, but he was,
right.
Like, do you know what I mean? But good band. And that's coming out on Sky. And I think Sky are just buying up all these fucking films, all these indie films, you know what I mean?
So basically now is the time to be making them, as you say, because they're just desperate.
Sky are buying 30 of these films this year. I mean, they paid good money. Slightly, I won't name it, but slightly south of 500,000 I'm pretty sure.
Wow.
So they paid, do you know what I mean?
What's going on with your movie? What platform's it going up on?
I think it's Sky initially, and then it's going to end up on Netflix and all that sort of stuff, do you know what I mean?
Do you think you'll be getting a lot of calls from out the woodwork once it's out there in the world? Do you think you'll be hearing from a lot of people who, you know, perhaps haven't surfaced in a while?
No, I've got no idea. I don't know what having a film out is, and what it. I don't know. I mean,
what was the response when the book came out? What happened in the wake of that?
Well, let's be honest with each other. I mean, it sold 26,000 books, but let's be honest with each other. Most people don't read.
I know that as somebody who's just released a book.
That were in the book, I would send them the book and they would look for their parts. Probably quite a bit, right? And they look for their parts and then they go, oh, that was it. Most people didn't read the fucking book. They, you know, what? Well, okay, 26,000 people probably read it. But after that, I don't know, is the truth. You know what I mean? So I don't know what, but with films, we're living in a very visual age now. People watch films of people they don't even fucking like, let's be honest, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing. I suppose I'm going to get every music fan in Britain to watch it because there's nothing else to watch, you know what I mean? Whether you like me or not, you know what I mean? Whether you like it's not going to, they're going to go, let's fucking watch it, you know what I mean? And a lot of people like Oasis, so a lot of people will be interested, you know what I mean?
Well, I think what's cool about it is obviously, you know, your story is so much bigger than just Oasis. Although they were, you know, this gargantuan thing that you were a part of and the biggest, there were so many other things that, you know, contributed to the overall creation story and your story. And it's all in this film. So I think a lot of people will probably come to it because they know you through Oasis. But then we'll be like, oh, wow, this guy was like a punk rocker and he was in on the Hacienda scene. And
that's good. The DJ, or another one, the DJ at the Hacienda's Bez.
Oh, right. Yeah. Love it. Hey, I want to ask you this as we approach the end, Alan. The last time we spoke in 2017, you said it had been about 6 years or so since you'd last spoken to your dad. Have you guys reconnected since then, or is it still?
It's what it is. Do you know what I mean? You know, so we. Yeah, I mean, it's going to be what it's going to be between me and my dad. Do you know what I mean? You know, I mean, I suppose it's two hard-headed individuals that think they've been, well, I don't know what he thinks, but I think I've been wronged in a massive way. So that's where we're at, you know.
Because the relationship that's on display in the film, you know, is obviously...
Again, that's everything. That's what I say. Is me and my dad are like best buddies at the end and going into the sunset. No, it's not like that. I haven't spoken to him for fucking years, man. Do you know what I mean? In 20 years, I've seen him twice. Do you know what I mean? Do you know what I mean? The last time he saw me, asked me for money. Do you know what I mean? He's a cunt. Do you know what I mean? Yeah.
Do you think he'll watch the film?
God knows. Probably, because he's, you know what I mean? You know, no idea, but I mean, I hope so. Do you know what I mean? I think he gets off pretty light, to be honest, with the amount of stuff that he actually done to us. You know what I mean? I mean, he's portrayed as I mean, Jobson's got him down, hasn't he? Jobson just is brilliant. You know what I mean?
And that's the guy from the Skids, is it? Is that the band he's in?
Richard's such a good guy. Yeah, yeah. He's a Catholic, Richard, but it was hard for him to get his head around playing a Protestant dad, but he does it because in a way. The full-on Catholic dads and the full-on Protestant dads are kind of the same thing. It's just different words. Do you know what I mean? You know, but it's the same fucking shit. And I'm sure he just channeled people he knew in his particular life. Do you know what I mean? You know,
is that still the lay of the land up in Glasgow? Is life still like that? Is it that divided still?
I don't live there, mate. I don't know if I can answer that one. I don't think it's as bad. But, you know, but maybe if you're standing in the Rangers end of the Celtic end, maybe it is. Do you know what I mean? I just don't know. I don't live there. I haven't lived there for 40 years. It shaped me. I suppose I don't even hate Glasgow. I just, it's what it is. It made me. I got the business savvy for Glasgow. I got the never give in part for Glasgow. Do you know what I mean? So, do you know what I mean? You know, but also I had a shit time when I was there. Do you know what I mean? You know.
And obviously, I know you've got connections with Manchester and Wales, where I'm talking to you at, and London. Do you feel like you have a home, or are you a bit more of a nomad like me? Because I'm from Birmingham and I'm here at the moment, but I wouldn't say that Birmingham is my home.
London's my home because I've been there for 40 years. I love Manchester. I absolutely love it because, I mean, I'm just the Oasis thing. I mean, I love Manchester. I just, that's, for me, I suppose that's my second home. Do you know what I mean?
It's a great place. My dad's from Manchester and it's just the people. They're rich, they're warm, they're funny.
I'm the funniest. They're the funniest, man. Do you know what I mean?
How's Sean doing? Is he well?
Oh, he's good, yeah. I was talking to him yesterday, but Manny phoned me up on Christmas Day. What was he slagging me for? He just phoned me up to abuse me. Do you know what I mean? It's funny, man. You know what I mean? I think it was about Rangers, to be honest. And I don't even fucking really support them. So I haven't seen them for years, but... just phone me up, like, giving me shit on New Year's Day. And you're like, all right, McGee, oh, ho, ho.
I love it, mate. Well, listen, thanks so much for not just the chat, but for everything, Alan. I consider you a dear friend, and it's always nice catching up.
Keep in touch, Matt, all right? You look good, man. You look healthy yourself.
Thanks, mate. Yeah, I've been taking some tips from you and living the good life, living the clean life. Cheers, Alan.
Bye, mate.
Take care, mate. Nice one, dude.
Maybe I don't really want to know how you got in grows, 'cause I just want to fly. Lately, did you ever feel the pain? The morning rain as it soaks you to the bone.